What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of The Textual Talk, where I'm your host, HD. And today we got a special guest for you guys, none other than Mr. Kev Tech Support. You guys should know him from YouTube. He's pretty much, you know, one of the best guys I see talk about help desk on YouTube. But in today's episode, what we're going to cover is how to get in help desk, skills to use to get into help desk, how to negotiate your salary, what type of salaries can you expect in help desk, and a little bit more also about, you know, his new Udemy course that he just dropped. So guys, without further ado, let's welcome in our guest. What's going on, man?
I'm doing good, man. How's everything?
Can't complain. It's another Friday. Still working, so I really can't complain. So I want to start the podcast off a little bit. And so, you know, like, and say, like, who is Kev Tech?
Yeah, definitely. So if you guys don't know me, a little bit about me and my background. I have been, before I got into IT, let's just take a step back. Let's do like a, just go a little bit back in time. So before I got into IT, I worked in a restaurant. So I have a lot of restaurant experience. I've been working for a really long time. So like literally, like if I were to tell you my age, you'd be like, what? So I've been working since I was 9 years old. One of my first jobs was working in a supermarket. It was really random, but I have worked various jobs from a Chinese restaurant to a pizzeria to scrap and metal. I also worked at Chipotle. I worked at Qdoba, worked at 16 Handle. So a lot of my background experience is a little bit of everything. Then I wanted to use those skills and pivot that over to IT. So also on top of that, I actually did 4 years in NYPD. So I have all these different types of skills, and I transferred that over to IT. And how did I do that? So in one of my final jobs, or one of my last jobs I had when I worked at a restaurant, I actually got let go because the company had issues and with finance and stuff like that. They had a bunch of financial issues. So they let go a bunch of people in the restaurant. And at that time, I was a supervisor at that time. And I was like, do I want to go back to a restaurant? Or do I want to go get an actual like job and career path in IT? Like I was thinking about it because I had a lot of people tell me about the CompTIA Plus, and I was like, I don't know what that is. Like, is that like your A Plus? Like, is that like your grade on an exam, or is that like an actual cert? So I didn't know about that. So I just started asking one of my friends because I was always into gaming. I'm a big gamer. I'm into like CSS, Counter-Strike Source. I play lots of Team Fortress 2, Age of Empires, a lot of PlayStation console games, PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3. And I used to be on before TeamSpeak. I'm not sure if you're familiar with TeamSpeak, but I was on Ventrilo. So I was on Ventrilo. It's like similar to talking like on a Discord, but they have different channels, but there's no chat. It's just talking only. It's like no chat or text capability, just talking. And I had a friend that, he actually worked for Washington, D.C. He worked for the White House. And he told me about A+, Network Plus, Security Plus. I didn't know anything about those certs. So he told me you should go get the A+. But then nobody told me how to get started or how to do that. So I did some research on my own. And lo and behold, I found a school that is called the Brooklyn Adult Learning Center. So they actually do A+, Network Plus, Security Plus for free. All you literally got to do is show up. And all you literally got to have is high school diploma. That's it. So I went over there. I got my high school diploma. I showed them that I had some sort of degree. Because at the time, I didn't really have a degree, but I did have some study in college. I did go to John Jay. So I do have some John Jay credits. So I transferred that over to that school.
What's John Jay? A school in New York?
Yeah. So I went to John Jay College of Criminal Justice. I studied to work for the NYPD. I wanted to either be a police officer or a lawyer. And I actually never finished that. So I'm actually like a college dropout. And I actually took that information or took those credits and I showed the people in the school that I actually gone to college before. And they looked at that like, okay, so then actually you don't have to do any of these other things. Because there's like an exam, then you're required to do certain other things if you don't have a college degree or you don't have any college credits. So I showed them that I had that. So I went and they put me in the A+ class. And that's where I learned with one of my teachers, Andrew Boilers. And I got super nice guy, down to earth, super chill. He showed me the fundamentals of IT. And I learned about, at that time, it was 901. series and 902 series. So like the A plus, if anyone that's brand new or just watching this, the A plus consists of two exams. So it's like an exam of software and an exam of hardware. So it's split into two pieces. And I usually tell people to go look at the objectives, and that will give you a good idea of what to study for the exam. And also the other thing that I was doing at the time, because I wanted to get my fundamentals in place, I looked at the OG Professor Messer because he has a lot of free videos. So I started looking at his content and I'm like, oh, this is not that bad. This is pretty easy to understand. It's not that bad. But you got to keep in mind that I didn't know what a mouse was. I didn't know what a keyboard was. I don't know nothing about IT. I'm brand new, from scratch. So my teacher trained me in the A plus stuff. And then I actually did really, really well. So I did so well that I actually started fixing computers and fixing stuff for the actual school that I went to. So a teacher would have an issue with their Windows XP machine. And I'm like, oh, God, all right, whatever. So then I'm over here trying to fix it, trying to troubleshoot it. And yeah, and then we were trying to transfer people over from XP to 7. And it was a lot of blue screens of deaths. And I'm over here trying to figure out why they're having that issue. And I got most of my experience from that school. And then lo and behold, I got my A+, and I started working for my first job for the Department of Education. The actual school got me an interview with the hiring manager for the DOE, and I worked as a field technician. Then after that, I got hired because of my customer service, not because of my tech skills. So when I went to the actual job interview and the IT manager came and interviewed me, he told me about why should we hire you if you have no job experience, right? Tech experience. You have zero job experience in IT. Like, I don't understand why I should hire you because you don't know anything about IT. And I told him that I don't know anything about IT, but I'm really good with customer service. So you either have customer service or you don't have it, or you learn it over time. And I think I could transfer that over from my restaurant experience over to IT. And that's the reason why you should hire me, because at the end of the day, if a user is having an issue, I have empathy for them. And I have that from based on my previous experience from restaurant. And I feel like you could train people in IT, but not soft skills. You either have it or don't have it, or you learn it over time. So he liked that answer. He appreciated that honest feedback. And yeah, he gave me a chance. I worked for the DOE, and then I started going over to different jobs after that. My first job is very painful, by the way. I was making $9 an hour as my first job in IT. Sometimes you have to take a step back and make sacrifices in order for you to get a job, or in order for you to get your feet wet in IT. So if you don't make those sacrifices when you're early in your career, early in your game, down the long run, it's going to pay off, but you got to do those sacrifices. And that includes everything from getting your feet wet, from learning IT, getting the fundamentals. It's just everything in life. You need to take a step back and at least get your foot in the door, or at least get a stepping stone in IT, and that's going to pay it forward later on in your career. So that happened to me. So I took that first job. Then after that, I got my second job and I doubled my salary. And I was working for IT support engineer for an MSP company, which they manage different vendors, different people. Then after that, because a lot of hedge funds, they're all big about MSP jobs. I love people that have MSP experience. So I got my first job working directly for a hedge fund after that, for a really big hedge fund, like one of the top five. And I worked there as a senior help desk. And then after that, I worked for another hedge fund. And I worked as a junior sysadmin. And that's how it was, because I got the job for the MSP. And because I knew how to market myself now, it's just my personal experience based on what happened to me. I knew how to market myself. I knew what to say. I knew what to convince the manager as to why they should hire me, because a lot of people, they go to a job interview and everyone has the same skills and everyone has the same certs. But everyone has the same certs, everyone has the same resume, but it's the one person that is the one person that convinces the hiring manager as to why they should hire you. If you're the one that motivates them and you basically trigger them and you tell them why you should hire you, if you're the perfect candidate, you got to give them a reason why, right? If you do that, they're going to hire you. If you don't do that, if you give them the same boring answer as other people, then they're not going to hire you. It's just a repetitive, all the answers. So I learned how to market myself. I doubled my salary again, by the way. So I did it three times in a row. And then after that, I worked for a Japanese asset management company. And I was working directly support for the CEO, the CFO, the CIO, all C-level folks. They're down, super down to earth. I had wine and beer with the C-level folks. I hang out with them. I ate with them. I was fixing their iPads, their computers, any event that they would go to, I would go with them. I was the only IT guy for their for that office. Like, we have a different team outside of that office, which is based in Dallas. And I was helping with all their IT issues. They just come directly to me. And then fast forwarding after that, I worked for another MSP company, and now I work for a fintech company as a infrastructure support. So that's a little bit about me. There's a lot of information packed to pack there and a lot more questions to ask there. But yeah.
No, definitely, man. You pretty much, that's a great intro. You really said a lot of different things. I was like trying to notate if I was going to bring him in or not. I know for sure the first one was like that get your fundamentals down, but you were saying like you pretty much went from zero to IT hero, you know, and I want to use that catchphrase from Master IT. Shout out to him. If you need some help going from zero to IT hero, go check him out in his program. But that's pretty dope, man, especially, you know, for you to be so transparent, because what was the year? So when you started that the job?
My first job?
Yeah, the $9 an hour.
$9 an hour? Got it. All right. Yeah, so I actually started in 2014. So I've been in IT for a while. I started like 2014. It's a long time ago. So it was like the XP7 era. And some AOL in there. So
technically we started around like the same time. I got my undergrad in 2013. Then May of 2014, it's like I got my first help desk role.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's cool that you said that. But I'm surprised that they would pay that low in New York, though. I am surprised at that for the Department of Education.
Oh, no. So if you ever work for a school, they don't pay a lot. So I always tell people that, well, actually, I got the same advice from my teacher. So I'll give you advice based on my teacher, what he told me. And that's how I learned myself, because of my teacher. He told me, when you get your first job in IT and it sucks, it's just going in and out. So basically, if it's a bad job or it's a job that you're just starting out, just go in there and get your experience, get your feet wet, so you can add something to the resume. And then after that, you could go and aim for a better job. So that's basically what I learned from him. And I took that knowledge with me no matter where I go. And that's what I do. So if you're listening to this, anyone that's listening to this, you need to sometimes you need to get a job, or you need to get a foot in the door or a stepping stone in order for you to advance your career. And don't look at it as a bad job. Like if it's a bad job, just stick to that job as much as you possibly can until you find a better job. But don't leave your job because you feel like it. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess like you said, finding a better job. I definitely agree. Well, I only said the Department of Education because I viewed it as not being a school. I viewed it as being part of the government instead of actual school district. So that's the reason why I said that, because like I started off being a subcontractor for TSA.
Got it.
Which got me a clearance. So I guess that's why like the pay that I did get was like, you know, as good as it was, I guess, at that time. So that could be that reasoning. But that's dope, man. So what I'll go into now is like, now we're in 2022.
Yep.
If somebody wanted to start in, you know, help desk, which this is, you probably get access all the time. Like, what do you recommend for somebody trying to get in help desk in 2022, type of skills and how to get those skills? Like what would you give advice on someone to do that?
All right. So if it's help desk, the thing is, help desk is kind of hard for me to answer because all help desk jobs are not created equal. So some help desk jobs have access to Active Directory. Some you don't have access to Active Directory. Some you have access to Office 365 Admin Center. Some you don't have access to Office 365 Admin Center. But as I say, is if you want to get a job in help desk, or if you want to just make yourself stand out, you should know a little bit of everything. So I always tell people to spin up a home lab, learn Active Directory, learn Office 365, learn Windows 10 troubleshooting. You may need to know about Active Directory, Azure AD Connect, because I've seen a lot of help desk jobs are asking for that. You may need to know about remote tools, or you actually need to know about remote tools, because there's a lot of pandemic going on right now. So you need to know about how to remote into someone's computer. So You will probably need to know as well, like video applications. So it could be like Zoom, Cisco WebEx, or another application. But at the end of the day, I tell people to build a home lab. The home lab is going to help you out. You learn those skills. You learn about password reset, account creation, user lockout. You learn about Office 365, creating mailboxes, creating distribution groups, creating security groups, and all that good stuff. And you add that to your resume, and then you make your resume stand out that way. And then on top of that, obviously, you need to get a cert. So I always tell people, look at the CompTIA A+, whether they like it or not. Like some people look down on CompTIA, but you should have at least CompTIA on that resume, because some companies won't even look at your resume if you don't even have that cert. So it depends on the company, but some companies will not look at it. Oh, I actually get a kickback from the company when you throw in your resume because of the ATS system. They look at the A+, you don't have it. Like, okay, we don't want to see your resume. You get declined immediately. So that's going to be my advice for that. It's still more than that, actually. So get the A+, build a home lab. The third thing would be build your LinkedIn profile. Make sure you build your connections. Make sure you have a strong LinkedIn profile. It has to be tech-related. Put a professional picture of you on the LinkedIn profile. Don't put a picture of you having a party or whatever, or you drinking or doing an upside-down whiskey shot or whatever. Make sure you have a professional photo on your LinkedIn profile and make it tech-related. Maybe add a video from YouTube that you create, and you throw that over your LinkedIn profile to make yourself stand out. And make that look genuine and professional, and then start adding people, build genuine connections. Don't just add people because you feel like it, and start talking to job recruiters. Sometimes it's not what you know, it's who you know. So you have to build those connections. The connections are very important. And I always tell people to join like social events and join webinars, join different things. Like a lot of times, like AWS, Microsoft, or other companies may have job events and stuff like that. So I definitely recommend you do that and you pass over that resume. So then it goes back to the resume as well, because if your resume sucks, no one's going to call you. If you have a good resume, people are going to call you. So it's a lot of information to pack there. There's a lot of different things. So the home lab, make sure you have a good resume. Make sure you fix your LinkedIn profile. You may need or may not need the A+, depending where you live. Some companies will not ask for it. I have trained over 300 people in IT, and some people that I have trained do not have a cert. They just have a home lab experience, and that's it. And they have a good resume. So goes back to all that. And also the other thing is, sometimes you can't find a job. Like sometimes I tell people, that's not an excuse to not apply for remote jobs. Apply for remote jobs. Maybe there's a help desk job hiring in another state. You don't know. So apply for remote jobs in another state. Then the other thing is talk to job recruiters. Maybe you need to talk to a recruiter in Robert Half Technology or Tech Systems or Inside Global. Any recruiting firm.
Apex.
Apex. Any recruiting firm is willing to give you a chance if you give them your resume and you show them that you're willing to learn and stuff like that. So those are all the things that I recommend. This is a little bit of everything. So
Yeah. Definitely. I will tell people, because, you know, there's been a lot of false like propaganda when it's coming into telling people how to do some of their resumes like for ATS, because even if you try to cheat the ATS, it doesn't matter. Humans, they're going to interact with it. So you do need to make sure it looks good and you're not just copying the job description, putting it in white ink on the bottom of your resume, thinking that's going to help you get a call back, because it does not work like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was cool, man. Let me see what I had to ask you, because you really are making it easy for me today. all right. So you kind of answered this already. Well, you kind of just said it kind of like high level. But for example, like my latest video on YouTube is I said, you know, the IT help desk helped me quadruple my salary, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know from your experience, since you've trained so many people in help desk recently and over the last couple of years, like what would you say a fair or typical average help desk salary would be? Of course, we know it's going to be variances between regions and stuff like that, but based on maybe offer letters or things you've seen from like past like students or, you know, interns, what is, you know, a ballpark figure that you think, you know, will probably be at least decent in 2022, especially with, you know, inflation and everything that's going on now?
That's a very good question. So I actually, believe it or not, I am very aggressive when it comes to salary. So if I'm training you or if I'm working with somebody, typically we don't aim at 40K. We aim at about 50K or higher. One of the guys I have trained recently, he is making 75K in New York. Then another guy that I trained recently, he doesn't have any certs, but he has a computer science degree and he's making 90K as help desk in Texas. So actually it varies from state to state, obviously, but I would always tell people to go for the higher salary, 50K or higher. And the thing is, like, how do you get those higher salaries, right? You have to learn more experienced stuff like SSEM, Ivanti. You may need to learn about Norton Ghost or MDT, Microsoft Deployment Tool. Like, you got to learn, like, software packages, how to create packages, how to deploy packages.
Like Intune and stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly. Like if you look at the jobs and if you go and look at, like, senior desktop support, which is still part of help desk, those jobs typically pay more. They pay more than 50K, but they require you to learn more skills. So that's where you spin up a home lab and you learn those skills. So hopefully that answers your question.
No, it definitely did. And I asked that for a reason because, you know, I try to highlight every chance I get about, like, how underrated help desk is and how it's not just this abyss you can get sucked in. I mean, I know why I can feel like that at times because I think some of the things I think I've shared before in the past, like, if you're doing, like, a call center type help desk, you have some people who not carrying their weight. So I remember, like, for me, I would do probably two or three calls. Sometimes the guy next to me is still on the same call and I already know the answer. So sometimes, like, you feel like people aren't pulling their weight.
Yeah.
You're dealing with people like, oh man, let's talk about this. Cause it's funny. You're dealing with people who don't know anything about computers. So I used to try to just make it as easy as possible. And I would say something like, we used to use, so this is how old school I am, before, they had Skype and stuff. Well, no, not Skype. I want to say this probably is what Teams evolved into, but we used to use Microsoft Office Communicator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
And so that's what I said, hey, you got your Office Communicator up. Can you, I'm going to message you. Can you share your screen? I used to do it like that. And then we had another way. I forgot we used to use a remote into, like, if we want to use our C account, which was our admin account, right? Very quickly, can you tell us, like, maybe like the either funniest, like, nerve-wracking issue you work with an end user, or maybe, like, when they're, like, probably, like, the most clueless person, like, you ever work with. Like, do you have, can you recall that? Because I know I have, like, a couple, and they're, like, always funny to me when I think back about it.
Oh, so I had a guy actually recently because actually my help desk guy was losing his patience. So this happened this week, actually. So, I was working with somebody and I was just listening to the conversation. I didn't even get involved and I finally got involved. So one of the help desk folks was helping somebody and he told them, I need to get on your system. So I need you to use TeamViewer because we use TeamViewer. So I need you to use TeamViewer and get on your computer. And he kept downloading TeamViewer on the work machine, not the laptop. So he's trying to log in through Citrix. Did they use, right. We use Citrix desktops. So oh, he's yeah. trying to log
I
in.
I know why, because I'll finish it, and then I'm going to jot down, I need to ask you this, because so you go ahead. You
wanna
ask you
this question. Yeah, so basically he was trying to open up TeamViewer from the work machine, which by default is going to be blocked. We block it using CrowdStrike.
CrowdStrike,
and we also block it with other applications that we have. So he opened up, he's like, why isn't that downloading? And then my help desk guy spent like a good 20 minutes explaining to him, no, I need you to open it from your actual machine. He's like, I am on my actual machine.
What?
And then I'm just like listening to the conversation. And then he's like, I'm losing my patience, Kevin. So we had him on speaker and we muted him because we don't want him listening to what we're saying. And then I'm like, all right, I'll talk to him. So then I'm having a conversation with him and I'm like, where are you opening TeamViewer from? He's like, oh, I'm opening it from my work machine. Okay. Can you do me a favor? Can you exit out of everything? Just sign out of your computer, your actual work computer, and then open up TeamViewer from your laptop. So yeah, I could do that. And then he signed out. I'm like, I need you to open up TeamViewer. He's like, okay, but I'm not on my work machine. I'm like, no. Like, open it up on the laptop. But Kev, I'm not on my work machine. How am I supposed to open up TeamViewer? I'm like, you don't understand what I'm saying. I need you to go to this website and I need you to open it up on your browser on the laptop. He's like, oh, okay, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. So then he started putting it in there. He installed it. He set it up. And then I'm like, okay, I need you to give me your ID and password for TeamViewer. He's like, I don't know what that is. And then he was trying to give me his username and password, like his Active Directory username and password. And I'm like, no, that's not what I want. That's not what I'm asking for. Yeah, that.
Don't give me that.
I don't want that. I want your actual ID and password for TeamViewer. So then I'm helping him with that. And he finally gave me that. And it was really difficult. And finally got on his machine. And literally the only issue that it was the display settings. So he had a monitor on the left, a monitor on the right, and it was going right to left instead of left to right. All you gotta do is just switch it. So I went to the display settings, I switched it, then I had him remote into his desktop again, and everything was fine and dandy after that. And then we finally got him up and running. But the help desk guy was really frustrated. I was super chill about it. I'm like, this is like a regular thing for me. I don't care. Whatever. So.
Yeah, and that's because you had the experience to actually be very specific in what you're asking him. And that goes a long way, even from help desk to like what I'm doing, cybersecurity, being specific. And I'm talking about even being specific in documentation. I always tell people that all the time. One wrong thing could be an issue, and that's why asset management is so critical. Like, you might know a person is a VIP because they put it wrong in asset management and then pop up in ServiceNow or something. And now, you know, the CEO, you know, was locked out of his account. He can't do anything for X amount of hours because, you know, this then turned into like a level one, like a S. What is it? I forgot. I didn't use ServiceNow in a minute.
Like an SLA agreement?
Not the SLA agreement, but you got your criticals and the highs. Like it was a
P1?
Yeah, there we go. There we go. At P1 or P2, it would pop in for a VIP person. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I remember like some funny ones I had, like people call in if they're not connected to the network. Or one time, no, we put a front end message up and tell them, hey, you know, right now the TSA IoT service desk, I mean, the TSA network is down. So we put that up for everybody. Literally, no, they blow on the thing. Hey, I'm not getting any emails. Neither are we. The network is down. We can't get emails. that was a fun one I had one time, like just like right when I was getting ready to move, like about 6 years ago. Lady was trying to argue me down that her username was her password and vice versa. I said, no, it's not. And then I just had it and I hung up because we know you're not supposed to hang up. But I didn't care because like what they're going to do. I'm already gone, so it's not like they're going to fire me. So it was just a lot, man. Or like, I'm not gonna lie, one of the funner, easier ones I used to like is like a person would say, hey, I got like 50 gigs of mailbox storage, but I can't receive any emails. And then we go in and say, oh yeah, you got all these large attachments like taking up like the cache like storage on your mailbox. That's why they're not coming in. So you're going through and arranging stuff by attachments, seeing if they need them, or we just make them a archive folder, move them to there, and you know, see and receive all, and now they're getting all the emails. You know, the simplest things actually did used to make people a day, which was good. Like that type of intrinsic feeling you get in help desk, you know, with helping people. And if you don't like helping people, you will not do good at help desk.
Yeah, you won't. Definitely not. Definitely not. And I remember helping someone. Now you mentioned that. I remember helping someone, and I gave him an extra monitor, and he thought it was a computer. He's like, Kev. Like, he was so serious about it. I thought he was joking. Kev, this is crazy. You gave me a second computer. Now I'm gonna be double as productive. I'm like, that's a monitor. It's not a computer. And some of them think that it's a computer. I don't know if that ever happened to you, but it's happened to me with financial people.
Oh man.
And they look at me like you just saved my life. You give me a second computer. I'm like, that's not a computer, that's a monitor.
Man, you have people like, you know, they don't even know, like, hey, can you go to your internet browser? What's my internet browser? Like, that's the kind of stuff I used to get tired of. But I was going to ask you, why in finance they do not believe in personal machines? They believe in using VDIs on Citrix. Like, what's up with that?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if it's because of cost or it's because...
I don't think it's because of cost. I think it's because of maybe like they don't want everybody to access certain things or the laptop to fall in the wrong hand. I think that's kind of what I think.
Yeah, they probably lock it down, because I know from personal experience they use some companies, and it's based on my other jobs, they use Varonis, and then they use Splunk, and then they use all these other third party applications, and they track everything that you do. And then some companies have Cylance, some have Black Carbon or Carbon Black. You know, it's just, I think it's more of like a security thing. They really locked the living hell out of the computers, like crazy. Like, you can't even do anything on it.
I can't even go on YouTube on my VDI, which is stupid, because I like to listen to stuff at work. I don't like, so I have my AirPods in. I don't want to seem like I'm just ignoring people, but it's only because, hey, I can't access YouTube, so I can just listen to like some lo-fi music or something like that on the computer. Mm-hmm. And but I mean, I get it for them doing it like that, but to me, it's twofold. Okay, I like not having a machine, but then I do like having a machine because I don't have to use my personal device to download Citrix and use that when I could just use theirs. They could do the same thing and track everything the same way. Because my other position, I used to work closely with Insider Threat. And so, yeah, we could see a lot of things. Like, you know, while people are listening right now, I remember one of the things I had to do was do a year-to-date Splunk search of I had like a list of users. I had to put the users in Splunk to make like a lookup list and pretty much see everything they printed year to date. And that's what I do like to tell people. You think you're getting away with stuff on your computer, but you're not. They can see everything. Mm-hmm. They can see certain people in Insider Threat can actually see your emails. I could see the emails too. We would do like a lot of phishing stuff. Like, we could go into a proof point and see exactly what the phishing email was or whatever type of email that came in and see how many people received said email. So, you know, on the end user side doesn't know. They're just thinking they're getting away. But I was like, if they got a rule set up for something, or you messing around exfiltrating data and you think you're getting away with it, it's not if but when you get caught. They might let you get just enough to put a federal case on you so you go to jail. So I didn't want to make this gloomy, but yeah, man, that's definitely, like, you know, you're not getting away with what you think you're getting away with.
Definitely.
So you briefly talked about, we're going to spin back real quick to the salary thing really quickly. So you said entry level. We're going to say right now, we're going to say average, because you said one guy 90, 70. We're aiming for 50 or past 50. So we're going to say 50K, 55K, whatever, right? Now, when they become to get like a big boss like you, what's the range they can expect? No, because I think a lot of people just leave help desk because they just feel like they can't make money in it, right? I think some people would love just to do it forever if they felt like they could keep on climbing the ranks. And some companies, they don't give you the opportunity, and you just don't know, oh, I can do this and then still do this. Okay, cool. I don't think everybody knows that. It's not a lot of people champion, hey, it's cool to be help desk. No, I make good money. It's not a lot of people saying that right now.
Oh, no. Yeah, I agree with that. So what people don't know is that if you work help desk for like a financial company, they make a lot of money. So if you work like Goldman Sachs or I'll give you real life examples. Goldman Sachs, there's another company like S Castle, another company like
that's for Goldman Sachs.
Like Blackstone Group or BlackRock or just a few financial City firms. Like, yeah, there's like so many. I have worked with a lot of them because I worked for an MSP company. But typically they pay a lot of money. And that's the reason why they pay so much money is because you're supporting financial applications. So it gets complicated. Mm-hmm. Analysis is different. It's not the same thing that you think. Because help desk in a financial company is completely different. It's not your regular Active Directory. It's totally different. Like, I work for a financial company as a senior help desk, right? And I had access to Active Directory. I had access to make changes on group policy. I had access to share folders. I had access to Proofpoint. I had access to Okta, the Okta admin console. I had access to Mimecast. I had access to Barracuda. I had access to a bunch of different things. Like, it's just Office 365, Exchange Admin Center, and a few different things.
Access to, like, one of my other jobs.
Yeah, so it's crazy. It's crazy. And then your access is insane. And then you're troubleshooting applications like Bloomberg or McCavicus or CapIQ. So if you know how to do that in a help desk environment, they typically pay over $100K. So those jobs are going to pay a lot more because you're dealing with financial applications. And if you know how to troubleshoot that, you make a lot of money in that for help desk because they those are the apps that make money. And if you know how to fix that, that's like the bread and butter of a financial person that works in a fintech company or a financial company. So
definitely. And you forgot to add in things like we get bonuses.
Yeah. Yeah. We get bonuses. They get well compensated. We get sometimes some companies get free lunch. You know, some companies give you like stipends, like for work from home stipends. Like they give you a certain amount of money so you can work from home, like a COVID allowance.
Speaking of that, I need to figure out how to tap into that. I think I could get me like a service tablet or something like that from that fund. I got to ask about that when I get back to work.
No, man, it's crazy because they people sleep on help desk, but if you work in a fintech company, it pays a lot of money. Like you'll see a lot of money in fintech. So it gets crazy when it comes to financial services. They pay a crazy amount of money. There's some people that I know that still work help desk, and they're not even help desk anymore. They're help desk managers for financial firms. So
yeah, man. Especially then, you know, you forgot to add in the good referrals as well for getting somebody a job there.
Yep. Pay a lot of money.
Yeah, man. This is my second rodeo, so I'm gonna see how I like it so far.
Cool.
But we don't really have to go into negotiations. I'll briefly talk about that, and then if you want to chime in on it, you know. I think people new to the field, with tech in general, it's like a new world. It's like, it's not like you're in a professional athlete or anything like that. But if you're going to compare it to regular jobs, you would probably say it's in that realm in the sense of the amount of money you can see in a short amount of time. And some people, you know, don't negotiate and they get nervous. They're kind of scared to say, oh man, let me get this. Or they feel like just because they don't have the tech skills, they can't do it. And they kind of forget about the other skills that they, you know, learned and used in other roles for years, and they don't ask their worth. And I try to tell.
No, I was going to say that pisses me off when not to cut you off, but that pisses me off when it comes to military veterans. So I work with a lot of military veterans, and I don't know if you know that, but I do volunteer for military veterans. I do a lot of tech training for military veterans for free, and I always tell them like, all your skills that you have learned, because you have worked IT in a submarine or you worked IT for the Army or for something else, whatever it is, all that could be transferred over to IT in the civilian world. So don't think that because you don't know anything or you think you don't know anything, you assume that it's not true. You could transfer that over to IT and you can make yourself a good amount of money and do those contract jobs or security clearance jobs. Like the people will give you a high amount of money. You just gotta know how to sell yourself. So I get frustrated with veterans. Like veterans are hearing this. Like, you guys, man, don't do that. You guys have a lot of skills. So
yeah, I mean, that's definitely how I tell people you have a lot of skills. And I tell them to just try to get as much you can now, because as the salaries start increasing, you will not ask for your worth. So it's impossible. Like, you just get in practice, because you know, for example, the company might quickly say, oh, they want to pay you, well, off you 130. You not knowing that, you know, they got the budget to hire you for 170. But most companies won't expect you to counter, but sometimes that's more than what somebody's ever made and they don't know. And so they settle, and then they're getting vastly underpaid than their, you know, peers. And so that's why I always tell people sometimes, like, man, you should have asked me first and see what we could have got out of them before you said yes. Because, I mean, me being transparent, I've said on playing my videos, like, I really started negotiating probably like a couple of years ago. Because most of the time, every time I got a role, it was like way more than I already had. And now I know, say, hey, if they offered me something that high the first time, they got more than that.
No, I definitely agree with you. So for me, when it comes to negotiating salary, like for someone that's hearing this, typically I tell them to aim for, and it sounds crazy, typically, I tell them to aim for 15, 20K, 30K more, depending on the job position, depending on what it is. And also, I tell people not to downplay themselves. So you can make a lot of money, But people short sell themselves and they assume that they cannot make that much money. And that's not true. And also the other thing is sometimes if you're working with a recruiting firm, you could ask for more money and they'll give you that extra money because they make more money. So
yep,
that's how it is with recruiting firms as well. So
definitely. And what I'll throw out there too is this episode is not sponsored by Blind or Fishbowl, but get you a Blind account, a Fishbowl account. You could probably do it on Reddit as well. But I know for sure I use Blind or Fishbowl and sometimes Glassdoor. Also, it's another site, levels.fyi. That's Foxtrot, Yankee, Indigo. use those to pretty much look up different type of roles you're interested in and see what the salaries are. And you could probably either average them out or see what they're consistently saying. That's how you can say, hey, based on my experience, based on what this job entails, based on the value that I bring to this company, I believe – no, a compensation of blank, blank, blank will work. And, you know, sometimes like we mentioned earlier about the bonuses, you can add, see if you can get that bonus or a sign-on bonus. You know, you really want to get more of your base because your bonus isn't always promised based on more, a lot of times based on more of the company's performance than your performance. So
I was going to say that also like with the bonuses, like sometimes you can negotiate that and say, I don't want the bonus, just give me the raise. So,
yeah. Definitely. But I mean, it is fun when in January when you get that bonus. I got mine this year. It was like my first bonus like that. So I was like, wow, I do feel like somebody in the NBA.
Nice.
But dope, man. So now what we're going to segue into really quick is, you know, if anybody's, you know this guy, he's been doing this stuff on YouTube for a while. So let's talk about first, like, what made you, like, earlier we talked about Kev Tech, but now let's talk about what made you start, like, Kev Tech on YouTube. Like, what was the, what made you really say, man, you know what? I need to start my own YouTube channel so I could, you know, help people, you know, that are probably reaching out to me that I'm, like, trying to talk to on LinkedIn or wherever you were talking to people. Like, you know, what was that urge that you started Kev Tech and how long have you had your YouTube channel?
So I had my YouTube channel since 2012, but I haven't made actual videos since 2016. 2016, I started making YouTube videos. And the reason why I made my YouTube channel is because I got frustrated with the IT industry. So the one thing that happened to me was when I got my first job in IT, it was a struggle for me to get my first job in IT. And no one gave me any information. I couldn't find any information a long time ago. Like, it's not like today where you have different YouTube channels, you have different people. Kids got good. Yeah, like the kids today, like they have Discord, they have all these, you know, third party applications, all these things that are there for you that can help you succeed. I think, for me, in my opinion, there is no excuse as to why you cannot succeed in 2022. That's just me. I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but it is what it is. But when I started, I struggled like crazy. So I'm like, I'm going to make a YouTube channel. I'm going to go over things that people actually need to know to get started in IT. And I'm also going to talk about everything, about the resume, about how to sell yourself in job interviews, how to fix your LinkedIn profile, what skills you need to know if you're working help desk, and all that good stuff. And that's the reason why I started my channel. I got frustrated with the tech industry, and I got frustrated with people putting clickbait videos that have nothing to do with IT and other people that they say that, oh, if you learn blah, 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 you can make $100,000 in the next couple of months. And you have like boot camps, you have all these things that are fake, that are very misleading. So I got frustrated with all those things. And I also wanted to help people because I started from zero and I didn't have anything. I grew up really poor. So I don't know if you know that, but I was extremely poor. So I grew up from humble beginnings and I know what it's like to not have anything. So I'm like, you know, make a YouTube channel. Let me help people. Let me reach out as much as I can and then see what happens. And then I started making videos and I started helping people. And, you know, I long and behold, I made my Discord channel and people are always on my Discord. I try to help people as much as I can. And honestly, I'm just a genuine guy just trying to help people because I know that it's not easy getting your first job in IT. So that's why I started my YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah, man, definitely. And I mean, same here, like. So I always tell people, like, I come from a regular, like, blue-collar family, you know.
Mm-hmm.
just me also just staying humble. And the same reasons that you brought up is the same reasons, you know, back in 2020 when I started, was the same thing. It's like, man, it's not a lot of people that look like me that's doing this. And it's not a lot of good content that's coming from people that's actually just telling people the honest truth about the industry. You know what I'm saying? If I, you know, tell somebody about a boot camp, I'll say because honestly, I have clients now that are in actual boot camps, and I'm actually a fan of them because some people need structured learning, and it does. They do give them practical work that can help them, opposed to going back to school where the curriculum really isn't enough to really help them get a job. I always tell people that, you know, if just because you finished the boot camp, you're probably expecting anywhere from 6 months to a year to maybe get that first role, just because it's just a lot. It's not a lot of entry level roles in like cybersecurity. It's like it maybe says 0 to 1 or 2 years. That's kind of entry level. And then you just got to kind of network and wow them and sell yourself the best to see if you get a shot. But I still like it over going to college, because college didn't really help me too much, in my opinion, when it comes to that. I don't want to get into that soapbox, but,
I actually, not to interrupt you, I was going to say that I don't have a boot camp, but I have my own mentoring program, and I'm partnered with another platform. And people that have taken that program that I have is called a Guide Me program. So basically, we guide you from A to Z on how to get started in IT. And people that have done that program with me, they all have gotten jobs in IT. So I have worked with 6, 7, 8 people. And the majority of them got a job after training with me for 3 months. So it's a separate platform that I'm part of. I'm a technical trainer for that program. And what we do is we give you fundamentals. So we give you A+ training and some network plus training. Then after that, you get to train with me and I teach you all the advanced stuff. And then after that, you could add whatever I teach you, or you could add the company or the platform over to your resume as job experience, and you can start applying for jobs. So that's the Guide Me program. So I'm part of that program. I'm partnered with another with Job Skillshare. I'm not sure if you know Job Skillshare, but I'm partnered with them. So I'm a trainer for that company. That's like outside of my full time job. So people are successful in that job. I even train a 17-year-old. He got a job in IT. I trained him with Job Skillshare. We trained him, and he got his first job in IT at the age of 17. And now he's 18 years old, and he's a sysadmin. So nice, anything is possible. So
yeah, we'll make sure to I'll put that in the description so guys can check that out as well. And so back to YouTube. You're at what, 35,000 subscribers right now?
Almost there. 34. Almost there.
Yeah, man, you've been killing it. I remember, it's crazy because I remember when I started 2 years ago, I think, I don't know what you were at. I think you were right under 10,000 at the time when I started. And I just started coming across, you know, everybody from like you. I think I came across Keep It Techie a little later, and then Dayspring, and then I came across Master IT. It was crazy. Like once, I'm not saying when I started, that's when everybody started. It was just crazy like how YouTube works, like the content you start making and you start ingesting and how it starts to suggesting other things or whatever. I'm not going to lie. Even a funny story about when I first started this new channel, I was doing, hey guys, I do not recommend this. You're not supposed to do this. I was really self-promoting my video, my first video on like people's like biggest video. And you're really not supposed to do that. The better way is to go on their channel, engage with what they made an actual video about, and then as it keeps on, then you could probably say, you know, hey, I did a video on that too. You know, it's a cool if I posted it or whatever. Or even if you do have a nice enough comment, people are going to see it. They're going to click on your profile, and then they might check out your channel. That's how you actually do targeted engagement. Don't go spamming everybody's stuff because they're going to remove it and block you. Because I was doing that. I was trying to do. It just was so many things. I was trying to do whatever it did to kind of get that buzz out there, but that's like the wrong way to do that. But yeah, man, I'm just salute to you on the success, man, because like guys, he has like so much, really like a lot of just good live streams and everything when it comes to even like the technical stuff. Like it's just a lot of good wealth of information. And it's a testament that, like, I tell people, like, I don't really worry about, man, why I don't have 30,000 or 50,000 subscribers right now. I worry about, as long as my content is good, I know eventually people on YouTube will see it and then they'll start subbing. But you mentioned Job Skillshare, but what I want to bring up now is you recently launched the Udemy course, and I briefly wanted you to talk about that, and we'll probably say, like, are there any more Udemy courses coming? You got any LinkedIn Learning courses? You know, let's talk about that
quick. Yeah, so I launched the Udemy course, and people have been bugging me like crazy. Like, when are you going to make a Udemy course? When are you going to make a Udemy course? And I keep getting asked about that. So, believe it or not, funny enough, so what I did was with Udemy, because I have a lot of YouTube videos. So mm-hmm. I took the best videos that I have on YouTube, and I structured it into a course, and I put it on Udemy. So if you want to support me, you could buy it. If you don't want to support me, you could buy it. You could watch it for free on YouTube. But some people don't want to see ads, and some people don't want to click on videos like being all over the place. So they tell me if I could just throw it on Udemy. So that's what I did. I added some extra videos in there, and I added some extra videos in there that are created by me from scratch. But then some videos are not created from scratch. They're actual videos that are from YouTube that I structured it in a way that makes sense. So, like, covers like fundamentals, like A plus stuff, command line, Active Directory, Office 365, mailboxes, distribution groups, how to create user accounts, how to create a home lab, share drive permissioning, how to set up NTFS, and a bunch of other things. How to market yourself, how to fix your resume, how to get free Microsoft Office 365 as an admin for 90 days using developer mode. It's a genuine knowledge of information, like so much information, how to use a ticketing system. So it's a lot of information. I basically structured it in a way that anyone that's brand new could take it. And in my opinion, I'm a little biased here. In my opinion, I think my course is better than the Google IT support course. And that's just me being biased.
Anything is better than a Google IT support course. I definitely always recommend, like, every time somebody's asking me about that course, every time I see a video or something like that and I'm reacting to it, I always say, just get Kev Tech's course. Because I've watched enough of your content to already know what it's about. And I want people that's listening to this now, if you know you're interested in help desk or you just want to go support the course, or you want to get the course to somebody, I'll make sure I had a link in there as well. But, you know, support him, really support your content creators, because, you know, he doesn't have to make these videos for you. And contrary to popular belief, just because you have, you know, the 1,000 subscribers, AdSense doesn't pay all that much. It, like, the video really has to be popping for you just to get, like, a whole bunch of money from YouTube. So that's one of the reasons why I started my Patreon, because, like you said, people don't like ads. And right now I got ads on my podcast just because, like, I put, like, a lot of time into it. So I just mm-hmm. need to make the money back so I can invest into it more. But just like you said, if you don't want to see the ads, come to Patreon. It's the same thing.
No, definitely. And I tell people, because people would drive me crazy. Like, when are you going to make a Udemy course? So I'm actually going to work on another course. But because you were asking me about if I'm going to make another course, and you asked the other question, I am going to make another course, but it will not be on Udemy. It will probably be in Teachable, and okay. I am probably going to make a IT support course from scratch, not YouTube videos, all Windows 10, Windows 11 from scratch, and it's going to cover A plus and Network plus and some Security plus stuff. And when you finish taking it, you're going to get a certificate from me. And then you could add that on your resume. So it's an actual certificate similar to TCM, Heath Adams. Because I don't know if you know, I'm friends with Heath Adams. I'm friends with TCM. So they
I think I reacted to his ethical hacker video.
Yeah, they inspired me to make my own course on Teachable and to make my own certification that you can actually get a cert and add it on the resume and actually show it to the hiring managers. I want people to ask for my cert when people are looking for jobs, like the hiring managers ATS system. I want them to ask for the Kev Tech cert. So I'm going to be working on that in the next couple of months.
Dope. Let's make sure you trademark that as well. And if you got any questions about that, I can definitely help you with that because I have to do that for my book.
Oh, definitely.
That's the thing too. I mean, how you thought about that too? Like doing a book, a quick book for somebody maybe?
Yeah, I'm getting asked that a lot as well. So yeah, I will probably make a book at some point. I do have a website too. You know, I have a website, so mm-hmm. It's a lot of information in there too. So
yeah, definitely. I mean, that's with me. Like, in the next step is like a lot of stuff that's in my book, and I may add some more stuff. Like, I use Wix right now, but I did think about you putting like that course part like on Teachable, because doing this last stuff, learning a lot of crap. Well, not crap, but learning how to structure stuff, like doing this LinkedIn stuff, is really showed me like how to make a good course. So that's why I asked you that earlier. In the
I'm waiting for you to make a SOC analyst course. That would be nice.
So that is in the works. I'm bringing in another person with that. I mean, we want to go kind of beyond that. We want to do twofold. We want to do a course, but we also want to figure out how to structure to train people. Like, think about it. Companies, I see openings for SOC analysts all the time, and it's a hard role to kind of just get thrown into because you have to load so many different things, whether it be in networking, stuff about help desk, IT, regular stuff, databases, you name it. It's a whole bunch of different things you got to know. Mm-hmm. So who better than people who did it for years to actually, you know, construct something that's legitimate and probably help your company or whoever listening, like, with these people. So if they come from us, you're like, oh, we know these guys are legit. We shouldn't have any problem with them. No matter what systems we use, they'll be able to get in and do it, because that's what I tell people all the time when it comes to being a SOC analyst. It's more so the thinking aspect of it. Plenty of times I went in different environments and learned different tools, you know, within a month or so, because I already know how to do it. I just have to learn how to use the tool. That's not the hard part. And I also say, I think that's one of the issues with hiring. Like, sometimes recruiters don't know, if they've never did the job, they don't know that tool isn't, you know, that important. It's how you approach it that's more important than knowing how to use that tool.
No, I agree with you. It's all about analytical thinking.
Definitely, man. That's definitely. But it's a Friday. I'm not going to hold him here long. what are some things that you had to tell the listeners, and like, you know, where can they find you? And, you know, if you want to leave them with anything important, what would you tell them?
Oh, man, it's a lot of information. So you could find me on LinkedIn. You could find me on Discord. And actually, you just joined Discord, too. That's funny.
Yeah, I've been on there, but you know, I haven't been saying anything. I'm like, I'm part of two Discords actually, but I had to change everything. I didn't even know my password was. It wasn't my last pass. So I had to change it just so I could change my name today. So people's like, man, who is this?
Yeah, I saw you. I was excited. So that's cool. But yeah, I'm on Discord. I'm on LinkedIn. My piece of advice for everyone, and this is anyone that's listening that's brand new to IT. I teach this to my students, by the way. So like anyone that's as a student that's listening, I see you in class, as Master IT would say. Same thing. Yeah. I see you in class. But my advice for students, or my advice for anyone that's brand new, is embrace rejection. So when you're brand new, I always tell people to embrace rejection. If you're brand new to IT, you need to have the right mindset, because if you don't have the right mindset, you give up too easily. And then you're going to get self-doubt. It's like, is this for me? Is IT for me? So you're going to get a lot of rejection letters. You're going to get a lot of rejection emails, but no matter what happens, don't give up. Someone will open the door for you. And when you get that stepping stone, or when you get that foot in the door, the rest of the doors will open for you. It's like an endless doors after that, after you get that first job in IT. So don't give up. Embrace rejection. No matter what happens, you need to have faith in yourself. You need to believe in yourself. And yes, IT is for everyone. So don't think like that. So you got to have the right mindset. That's number one. Now, number two is, once you get the first job, remember that you always got to be learning. So don't become obsolete. You got to learn how to be self-taught. A lot of it has to do with having a black belt in Google Foo. So you need to have a black belt in Google Foo, because if you don't, you're going to be in trouble. So sometimes you got to be self-taught. You got to be able to find the answers, because in my personal experience, I had people that are gatekeepers that have never wanted to teach me anything, and I had to learn on my own. So that's my second advice. Yep. And then last but not least, my third advice is that if you want to climb up the ranks, You need to be able to grind it out. So sometimes in life, you need to make sacrifices in IT. So that includes anything from studying, anything from getting a certification, anything from spinning up a lab and learning a new topic or a new subject. You need to grind it out and sacrifice. And by that, I mean like literally, like don't go out with your friends. Don't watch Netflix. Don't be lazy. Don't make excuses. Anything. Just do it. Just do it. Don't make excuses. Zero excuses. Just do it. And then you'll get far in life like that. Don't make any excuses. That's my third advice and final advice.
Man, he gave y'all some good advice, some good gems. Like if you got to replay this back a couple of times to kind of understand what he was telling you to learn for help desk, if not, the links for everything will be in the description. All right, guys. And that's been another episode of the Textual Talk, man. I appreciate everyone that tunes in to this podcast. If you'd like to stay in contact with me, please check out some of the links that I have in the description. You can join my Slack channel. Also, I have a mailing list that is about to come out just specifically for this podcast, just for my listeners. And also, if you want to stay in contact with me all the time, join the Patreon. You can join for as low as $3 a month. And it's just another way to help support this podcast and also my YouTube channel. But thanks for tuning in. And until next time, let's stay textual.